Good morning again. I would ask you to think about criticism for a second. So take a minute, think about critics, criticism, when you've been a critic, when you've been critical, and when someone has been critical of you. Just ponder. Okay. Stephen Pressfield is one of my favorite authors, speakers, thinkers, screenwriters, and he has critics. In fact, I went on to Amazon, which is one of my favorite things to do, and found a couple of his critics. Here's one of them. I didn't like this book. It was just too unintentionally silly to like. Now, I know silly books can be meaningful or moving or just plain fun, but this one is hard to recommend. It's particularly hard to suggest it to anyone in serious pursuit of writing or making of any kind. It's too weird, dramatic, and fanciful, and the good advice and thinking it does contain is often buried in indulgence. You can find equivalently good inspiration without these flaws. The book you should read instead is Art and Fear. It's cruel to say, but it's the book Pressfield should have read first. Now, I happen to like this book, so when I read it's hard to suggest it to anyone in serious pursuit of writing or making of any kind. I think, well, that's a little harsh. Here's another one I think I have from Pressfield's book. I was stunned at how bad this book is, especially considering that Seth Godin recommended it and it has over 1,000 reviews. Seth Godin is probably my favorite person on the planet. And I'm like, what? OMG, that's always a good review critic right there. What a load of crap. Thank you. When I was 73% through it, I just, also uncapitalized eyes. It's all right. It's no big deal. I just couldn't bear it anymore and scanned through what seemed to be even worse rubbish. There are so many good books on being productive and creative. This is not one of them. Stephen Pressfield has critics. He does not like critics. In fact, he says this about criticism or critics. If you follow this blog, which is his blog, which I do, you know that I'm not a big believer in feedback. By that, I mean notes, critiques, comments about one's work from writing groups or editors or friends or just about any other source. It's been my experience that very, very few people can read something and tell you accurately what's wrong with it. And practically nobody can tell you how to fix it. Feedback from anyone else will just screw you up. So you can see why. Guess what? I don't like critics. I don't want to hear a thing. No, thank you. Hugh MacLeod, he's also an author and a speaker and a cartoonist. He has another book I love. He also has critics. And I also went on Amazon. Find some of his. Two short ones, my favorites. Patronizing, recycled, shallow, but above all, uninspiring. Thank you. Another one. If Hugh's advice really helps you, you're probably not a creative person anyway. Now he's criticizing me. I just went on to find some critics of Hugh, and now you're criticizing me. Now, it's somewhat ironic. The book they're talking about is called Ignore Everybody and 39 Other Ways for Creativity, or Tips for Creativity. Ignore everybody, because critics suck. Andrew Stanton, director, writer, works for Pixar, wrote and directed Finding Nemo, Wall-E, Finding Dory, pretty good movies. Pretty accepted among the critics' movies. But Andrew Stanton also has his critics. Here's one from an official critic who makes money being a critic. The worst of it is the naked grab for emotion. Directors Andrew Stanton and Angus MacLean make it very clear what you are supposed to feel and when you are supposed to feel it. What they don't do is earn it. It's all of those things a little bit later and less. The littlest fish in the sea masquerading as a whale, failing to take into account its conspicuous lack of warm blood. That's about Finding Nemo. I'm like, it's probably one of the greatest movies ever made, sir. Seriously? Finding Nemo? I mean, it does sound so good. It's written so poetically. I'm just going to bash you poetically. Here's another critic. This one, I don't even know where I found it. So I just smile. I'm like, man, everyone has them. A horribly overrated film that delvers a lame story and tries to use star power to make it appeal to older audiences and tries to be a serious animated drama while at the same time making wisecrack jokes. The result, a terrible combination. Andrew Stanton has his critics. Yet, Andrew Stanton, when making films, receives criticism every week at Pixar in an organized way because they believe criticism is the best thing that you need in order to make a good film. So Andrew Stanton talks about criticism in different ways. There are critics, and then there is constructive criticism. And constructive criticism, he says, is meant to tear you down, maybe, but the intention and the heartbeat behind it is always to build you up and to encourage you and to inspire you, to make you want to do this thing and to want to make it better. So right up front, when we're talking about critics, this is what I would say. You're standing up here on this crate feeling pretty good, right? Because I'm even taller now. I'm even better than all of you. And that may be a little harsh, but let's say this. I'm feeling good. You know, I'm up in a good spot. And a critic comes along, and the critic's one point is to knock you off, to bring you down, to tear you down. The jibes, the cuts, the knives, the whatever you want to call them, is meant to bring you down, period. That is, in my opinion, what a critic does. And this is really important because right up front, I want to get out of the way the idea that some of us have, which is something along the lines of someone comes to me and says, hey, Ryan, I just want to tell you I'm a little concerned about you. I don't think staying up until 3:30 in the morning and drinking every Saturday night is good. I think it's affecting your sermons. I think it's affecting how you come on Sunday morning. You have a hangover. You reek of alcohol. I mean, I just don't think it's good. And what I don't want you to leave from after today is, man, I don't take criticism. Get out of my face, man. Ryan told me, don't listen to the critics. Okay, that is not what we're talking about this morning. And it's really, really tricky. Andrew Stanton calls it an art form. To come with constructive, building, encouraging, inspiring critiques without just tearing down and wrecking. And sometimes it's just on the way it's heard, which we have no control over. Sometimes it's on the way it's said. But the point of this morning and what we're talking about when we're talking about critics is just someone who's coming along to tear you down and to bring you down and maybe even hurt you, not to build you up, which again is tricky, but I just want to get that out of the way. There are other good businesses and good offices where they encourage criticism. They say, we want everyone at any time, at any hour, to be able to criticize anyone. Because if you have cancer, don't you want to know you have cancer? So again, this is a tricky subject. But what we're talking about this morning are the teardowns. And we only have 2 weeks left of 2 Samuel now. We had last week, which was the advice. Today is the critic or the criticism. And then in a couple weeks will be prayer. And we're taking these broad themes from 2 Samuel, kind of jumping around, and taking this story of the critic or criticism today. And I've divided this story up into four parts, which are almost kind of four parts of criticism. We've got the rocks, we've got the bow, we've got the infection, and we've got the legacy. All right, so that's how we're going to roll through criticism today. So here's the story where we pick it up. David, he's been the top dog. He's been the king. He's been the man. His son, Absalom, has come and taken over the throne from him. He has brought him down. David is forced to flee Jerusalem, the capital, the palace, his power, his control, everything. He's walking along this dirt path, this dirt road, with guards on every side, and this guy, Shimei, comes along. And Shimei starts throwing rocks at him. Dink, dink, dink. Hey! And you got to picture these guys in armor, shield, sword. And this little dude. Dink, 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 dink. This is what it says. Shimei says, yep. As he cursed. Shimei said, get out, you murderer, you scoundrel. The Lord has repaid you for all the blood you shed in the household of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. The Lord has given the kingdom into the hands of your son Absalom. You have come to ruin because you are a murderer. Get out, you scoundrel, you scumbag, you suck. You're a murderer. This is what you deserve. Criticism, criticism. David's guards are with him, and Abishai says, who is this dead dog that he curses my lord and king? Should I cut off his head right now? Whoosh. And David says, almost you can imagine in this dejected form, no, no. First off, what is it to you, Abishai? What is it to you? You know what? This is the Lord criticizing me. My son wants to kill me. Everybody wants to kill me. Of course, he's going to criticize me as well. I mean, I just pray someday these critiques and this criticism turns into some kind of restoration. And he starts walking along. And this line right here, this little section, David and his men continued along the road while Shimei was going along the hillside opposite him, cursing as he went and throwing stones at him and showering him with dirt. Can you feel it from that line? This little Shimei up there. Dink, dink, dink. Oh, curse you. Dirt. Scum, scoundrel, murderer. And there it is. So a few things to take away right off the bat about criticism. One, it never comes at the right time. No critic ever says, hey, is now a good time to take out your knees? I just wanted to make sure before I bust you up. In fact, it usually comes at the worst time because the critic smells blood in the water. Oh, David, man. Weren't you Mr. Cool King David? Now just leaving, you little scoundrel, scumbag, loser. And it's how criticism always comes. You're already down. Wow, just take me down further. Two, criticism is stupid little stones. These guys have armor. These stones don't do anything, right? Rocks don't hurt me. I'm covered. Shield, breastplate, sword. No problem. Dink, dink, dink. Scoundrel, scum. Criticism is rarely this big, monster, massive thing. It's usually pretty small. Just some stones. And as you're listening to this, remember, we're all either the critic or the one being criticized. Sometimes we're Shimei throwing stones. Sometimes we're the one receiving it. Listen from both perspectives. Third thing, the critic always has something going on. The critic's always got something going on. Stephen Pressfield, I'll come back to him, says it this way. If you find yourself criticizing other people, you're probably doing it out of resistance. When we see others beginning to live their authentic selves, it drives us crazy if we have not lived out on our own. Individuals who are realized in their own lives almost never criticize others. If they speak at all, it is to offer encouragement. Well, here's the story with Shimei. He was from the house of Saul. Now, you got to imagine, Shimei at one point was living large. Saul was king. Saul was the man. If you were in the tribe in the house of Saul, you had power. You walked along the street and everyone went, hey, there's Shimei. He's at the house of Saul. Whoa. You got to go into the palace. You got all the luxuries and the indulgences. And then suddenly this loser David comes along and takes it all from you. And now you're almost a curse in yourself. Saul, yeah, remember Saul, that terrible king we had? Remember when David came and made everything great again? Oh, David, oh, David, oh, David. Saul, Saul, Saul. Well, Shimei finally gets his opportunity in life. Guess who's boss now, David? Me. I'm back on top. Hurt people hurt people, right? Jealous people hurt people. People who are afraid hurt people. People who have shame hurt people. Critics, if they're out to hurt you, always have something going on. There's always some reason. Another one to maybe interject. Some of us are just Abishai, right? And we're going along in our armor, and it's our friend or the author we love or the speaker we love or the director we love or the whatever we love, and we feel like it's our need to defend them and to take off the heads of their critics. To which I love David's response. What is it to you? It's not talking about you. And this is why I really try not to defend any of the people I often quote. And sometimes people expect me to. I can't believe you quoted so-and-so. No, they can defend themselves. I'll defend using the quote, but I'm not going to get into a defense of whoever, of the critics for them. That's their job. I have enough to do on my own. So Abishai, what is it to you? And then this one is maybe the most important one to me, because I think this is what we do. David says, leave him alone, let him curse, for the Lord has told him to. When the critic comes and tears you down, it's all right. It's what God would do. It's what God does. God's working through him to criticize me. Now again, this is a fine line, and there's some gray area here, and I get that. And Jesus, when he came and said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, criticized people. Generally, people who were very critical. So if there's anyone who's going to be critical, it's probably going to be criticized by God if God is criticizing anyone. Because when we live in criticism and we live afraid of it, we're not vulnerable, we're not risky, we're not creative, we tend to hide. And I don't think God ever wants that. And I think it's very dangerous to start putting on God people who have something and some motive trying to tear us down. And to say, well, that's just what God would do. And there are commentators that would say, yep, see, David finally listening to God. He was able to learn from this person, and God was able to criticize him and tear him down. Again, fine line, I might say it this way. Coming back to Stephen Pressfield, spent years trying to write a screenplay. Finally wrote King Kong. I think King Kong Lives. I don't know which one. Anyway, it was trashed. It was trashed by the critics. Everyone hated it. Terrible screenplay. So Pressfield went out to a theater one day, and as people were leaving, he went up to a kid, 12-year-old kid, and said, hey, should I see King Kong? And the kid said, save your money. That movie sucks. And Pressfield said this, I was crushed. Here I was, 42 years old, divorced, childless, having given up all normal human pursuits to chase the dream of being a writer. Now I've finally got my name on a big-time Hollywood production, and what happens? I'm a loser, a phony. My life is worthless, and so am I. This is what I'd say. If a critic ever makes you feel that way, that is definitely not God. Because God is not about making people feel worthless, ever. And if a critic is knocking you down and making you feel like scum and worthless and a phony and what am I doing with my life, that, I would say, is not from God. Okay, so after the rocks, and this story keeps going, right? Critics, critics, criticism stories always do. We have the bow. Now get this, long story short, David leaves, he's away for a while, Absalom takes the throne, and then Absalom dies. Everyone loves David again, and David is returning back to the throne. Long story short, he's on a road again. Long story short, Shimei, remember Shimei? He's there. And he comes running up to David. Oh, my king, my lord, I'm sure you probably remember when I was up here throwing rocks at you. Forgive me, I was wrong. Now I'm here to serve the house of David. Forgive me, I was so wrong. I'm so sorry for tearing you down. Abishai, should I cut off his head right now? And David says this, what does this have to do with you? Again, I think this is between me and him. What does this have to do with you, first of all? What right do you have to interfere? Should anyone be put to death in Israel today? Don't I know that today I am king over Israel? So the king said to Shimei, you shall not die. And the king promised him on oath. Now, on one hand, this is a great story. This is a great, the bow, Shimei comes, he's apologetic, and we have this chance to take down our critic, and we say, no. Mm-mm. Not going to do it. Not going to kill you. We don't need any more bloodshed. I will never kill you. Now, that's good, but I feel like from this and where the story goes, there's something else going on here. And it's this little line, don't I know that I am king of Israel today? Which to me is this. Don't I know that I'm back on top where I belong? Shimei, that was cute. For a while you tried to tear me down, but I'm back. No need to kill you because I am better than you again. House of David, house of Saul. Sorry, buddy. Reminds me a little of the Hansons, Jason Hanson. He is an NFL kicker. He coached our daughter's soccer team. We had a soccer party at their house here in Spokane. And I went into Jason's house, and it was probably one of the most simple houses I'd ever been in. They had this dining room table that was given to them at their wedding, you know, 20 years earlier. And there was this whole sense from Jason, like, I don't need to impress anybody. I mean, because after all, I am an NFL kicker. Now, he didn't do that. I did that to him. I mean, man, isn't Jason lucky? Gosh, he's an NFL player. What does he have to prove to anyone? Everyone in Spokane knows he kicks for the Detroit Lions. Everyone in Spokane knows he makes millions of dollars. He can just go around like this all day. Yeah, I'm awesome. I want that. Which is a really dangerous game to play in any form. And I think David is playing the game a little bit. Shimei, oh, poor critic, it's okay, I'm back in control. And here's why I believe it. Because the next thing we have is the infection. Long story short, David is dying. Long story short, his son Solomon, whose mother is Bathsheba, remember that whole story, is going to inherit the throne. And David is giving this beautiful speech to Solomon. Solomon, be strong, be courageous, be a man of God. Do what God wants for you. Build the kingdom. Oh, and also, make sure you kill this guy. Oh, and also, don't kill this guy. Oh, and also, I'll just read this one to you because it's so good. Remember you have with you Shimei, son of Gera. Wait, whoa, David, you're dying. You're bringing up the guy who threw rocks at you? I thought that was long gone. You promised not to kill him. I mean, we're over that, right? He called down bitter curses on me the day I went to Mahanaim. When he came down to meet me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, I will not put you to death by the sword. But now do not consider him innocent. You are a man of wisdom. You will know what to do to him in case you don't. Bring his gray head down to the grave in blood. And this is how the story goes. There's no break here, okay? Just bring his gray head down to the grave in blood. Then David rested. Now, I doubt it's literally the last thing that happened before David died, but the story reads like that. Remember that guy that threw rocks at me? Bring his gray head down in blood. David, are you serious? Those little rocks? This guy who was hurt? I mean, I get it. The critic can hurt, but are you seriously carrying that thing to your deathbed? I thought all was good. Jerry Weintraub, we've talked about him before, as this was an agent, Hollywood agent, great book. And in it, he talks about John Denver in one story. Probably a lot of you don't know who John Denver is. Singer, songwriter, glasses. He basically created John Denver. He made him what he was. But he talked about John Denver with this problem with the critics. Here's the line from the book. I took two of them. John was beloved by fans, but never accepted by critics, and it drove him crazy. No matter how many records he sold, no matter how much adulation was showered on him, he needed to win and be loved by the people who had already made up their minds. He needed to be loved by the people who had already made up their minds, who thought he was lightweight and silly. The criticism drove him wild. He was troubled, as I said. He had no identity. He didn't know what he wanted because he did not know who he was. And basically, he chronicles the demise of John Denver. There's lots of perspectives on that story, but Jerry Weintraub says John Denver had a problem. He was infected with criticism. And I would say he was infected with playing this game. Who's up, who's down? And what I would say David is doing at the end of his life is making sure that his son Solomon knows not only are we up, we're like seriously up, dude. Solomon, make sure you shove that guy down. His gray head soaks in blood because we are the house of David. And yeah, I still haven't gotten over it. And I'm making sure as I die, he knows where he stands. Whew. Dangerous game to start playing. So here's the legacy. David dies, Solomon becomes king. Solomon calls Shimei in. This stuff all is in 1 Kings, way later after 2 Samuel. Shimei, here's the story. You can live, but you're going to stay in this spot. If you ever cross the Valley of Kidron, the Kidron Valley, you're going to die. So basically, you're in prison. Stay here. Well, 3 years later, Shimei has some slaves. They escape. A whole other story in itself. He goes after them to bring them back, and he crosses the Kidron Valley to bring them back. Solomon finds out and calls Shimei in. The king said to Shimei, you know in your heart all the wrong you did to my father David. Now it's turned into all the wrong you did to him? You threw some rocks at this guy when you were really hurt and you had a chance to bring him down. Now the Lord will repay you for your wrongdoing. But King Solomon will be blessed, and David's throne will remain secure before the Lord forever. Then the king gave the order, and he went out and struck Shimei down, and he died. And the kingdom was now established in Solomon's hands. Woo! Right? I mean, can you just feel it? I don't even know if I should stand on that. But I mean, let's just keep piling these bad boys up, right? That's about equivalent. Ugh. Right? I mean, Solomon's kingdom. Solomon's kingdom stands. Kill him. You've sinned against my father David. This is the true kingdom. We are loud. We are proud. We are in charge. We are strong. Bam. Story over, sucker. And what is Solomon's kingdom? Oh, man. The wealthiest kingdom to ever exist. The most power, the most control, the best buildings, the greatest army, the most wives. Also, the most slaves. Made slaves of everyone. Why?
Because I am the house of David, fool. We do what we want. We reign supreme. Look how high we are. Shimei, can barely even see him down there. He's dead anyway. This is the story of criticism. And this is the danger of it that I think we can even pass down to our children. You start playing that game. Oh yeah, that guy, man. Smelled blood in the water, tried to take me down. Well, this is what you need to know, kids. We're on top. Miller's rule. And if you ever get a chance, you just keep stacking crates. Because we're boss. Those critics. They don't matter. Oh, man. They don't matter, even though everything I'm doing seems to say that they do. So what do we do about the critics and criticism and being a critic? Well, here's one line I loved. I think this is true of all criticism. Don't let it bother you. It's just one person. I'm sure there are hundreds who think you are swell. And there's a part of me, I love that. I really do. It's just one person. There's hundreds who think I'm swell. Here's the danger. There are hundreds who think I'm up here. Thank you. Thank you for acknowledging the truth. Oh, there's one who wants to take me down? Whoa, what? And so we can get into this game, who wants to lift me up, who wants to tear me down, but I think it's a dangerous game. Here's what I think is a better solution for all of criticism and to get back to a place of being risky and vulnerable and creative, and it's this. Guess what? There's no crates. We're all kings. You are all kings. Guess what else? You're all slaves. Guess what else? There are no kings or no slaves. Guess what? It's all the same. You're all beloved children of God. Period. Oh, even them, and even them, and even them. And to start playing this game of who's high, who's low, how can I tear you down, build me up? Just stop it. Because when you do, guess what happens? Hey, Ryan, I really hated that sermon. Okay, well, that kind of hurts. I feel like I'm getting chopped down. But, Ryan, remember, we're all kings here. Okay, tell me more. Tell me more. I mean, if you think you're getting above me, I mean, no, I don't play that game. But I'm also not going to play the game where I think I'm above you now. And I'm not going to let you chop me down. And I'm not going to really chop you down because we're children of God, divine image bearers. So, let's talk. Way easier than it sounds. Way easier than it sounds. No, it isn't, you guys. You really believe that? It sucks. It's so hard. You guys are like, It's way harder than it sounds. It hurts. And I struggle with it every single time. And I know you do too. Oh, bust out my knees? Well, I'm busting out yours, fool. You think you're higher than me? I'm going to bring up some crates back on stage. I'll show you who's boss. Kids, you see what I do? I'm on top. And it's just a dirty game. And no one wins. And it infects you, and you carry it with you, and you will never become the person you are supposed to become. Because you're playing this game of critics and criticism and up and down. The election is Tuesday. I'm sweating already. We're going to end a little bit different this morning. There's a prayer I want to read, which I think ties all of this together and also ties the election in. Actually, it's very definitely ties the election in. It's pretty obvious. And I'm going to read this prayer. We're going to have a song. And during the song, we're going to ask you to leave. You can be dismissed. I don't mean leave literally, but you're going to get up and you're going to take communion. And the reason I want to end with communion today is because I want you to leave this space with the taste of bread and wine on your mouth. And I want you to go into this week of turmoil and distraction and tribes and fear and power and voting blocks and demographics with the taste of bread and wine in your mouth. I want you to remember the table where we all come. We are all together in this. I want you to remember there are no kings and there are no slaves, or we're all kings and we're all slaves, however you want to view it. I want you to remember that Jesus came and said, you guys, I can free you from this game of hierarchy and meritocracy and this constant striving and earning, and to remember that you're all divine image bearers. And I want you to go into this week with people who are voting the opposite of you and people who get you really mad and people who criticize you and you wanting to be a critic with the taste of bread and wine on your tongue. So I would like you all to stand. And I'm going to read this prayer. And at the end of it, take communion. And feel free to hang out, of course. Again, you don't need to literally live, but take communion. Remember Jesus. Remember the life of Jesus. Remember the words of Jesus. Remember that through dying we find life. And then feel free to hang out or leave or whatever you need to do. Here's the prayer for this morning. There are people in this room who are voting for Hillary Clinton, and they cannot fathom how anyone could ever vote for Donald Trump. There are people in this room who are voting for Donald Trump, and they cannot fathom how anyone could ever vote for Hillary Clinton. There are people in this room who are voting for neither or not voting at all. I was ready for like security to come up and rush me off stage or something. So, dang. There are people in this room who are voting for neither or not voting at all, and they cannot fathom how anyone could ever vote for any of our choices. Forgive us. Forgive us not only our inability to fathom those who disagree with us, but for our addiction to our bias and our insistence on building its walls higher and thicker. Forgive us for tribes and for privileged egos. Forgive us for our ignorance, our aggression, our arrogance, and our violence. We are infatuated with insults. We are enthralled with enemies. We bow to fear. Violence runs through our veins, indulgence through our arteries. We are kingdom people, we say. Bring the kingdom of God. Though we tend to call out, crucify him or her, more than we call out, Father, forgive them. Forgive us because we are better than this. Forgive us because the kingdom of God does not dance with other kingdoms. Forgive us because it is already. It has been. It will be. It is salt and light and meek and peacemaking. It is do not worry and do not judge. It is forgiveness of those who have sinned against us. It is giving to those who need, loving those against us, refusing to say full, and refusing to lust after flesh, and having no need for oaths and promises and fact checkers. Because the needy and the enemy are us, because the fool and the flesh in that way don't exist. Because we are better than this, we bear the image of the divine force of all that is good in this universe, in us. And so do they, yes, even them. We are so much better than this, and so are they, yes, even them. So we fill in an empty circle with a dark pen. We bow our heads and place our hands over our heart. We say our prayers and pledge allegiance to those whom put on the prince and princess costume at Disney World. There is no harm as long as we know we are pretending. There is much greater emptiness to fill in, the emptiness of a facade and fake kingdom, with the ground and awareness and event of divine love. May we never stop voting for that. May we never stop asking, seeking, and knocking on those doors, because we are better than this, and so are they. Amen.